You are listening to The Dr. Kinney Show, and I'm your host, Erin Kinney, a naturopathic doctor and speaker who's passionate about teaching you how to understand what is happening in your body, why your body is reacting the way it is, and how to make the appropriate changes in your life to get your body back into balance. Something I've learned from my private practice is that the more patients know about their health, the more likely they are to make better diet and lifestyle choices, which ultimately leads them to a faster recovery. Each week, you are going to learn actionable tips, tricks, and teachings from myself, along with the help of top experts in the holistic health community, so that you can make better informed decisions about your body and your healthcare. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Dr. Kinney Show. This week, we're going to do something a little bit different. I've been getting lots of questions from my many listeners. Thank you so much. I always appreciate the questions. And I thought I would do a little Q&A podcast. So I picked some questions that I think seem to kind of encompass a lot of what you guys have been asking and sending me. So I'm going to read the question and then I'm going to give you a little bit of an answer. And if you hear some of these answers and it sparks another question that you may have and it's not answered, please feel free to contact me. You can send an email to info@drerinkinney.com with your question or any of your questions and concerns. I'm always happy to answer what you guys have questions for. So first question is, my mother has osteoporosis. What can I do to help myself now in terms of prevention? And this is a great question. If you are female and osteoporosis runs in your family, particularly if you are a female in your 30s or your 40s, now is the time when you really want to start doing some preventative things. So I'm going to give a quick overview of what's actually happening in osteoporosis, because I think sometimes we think about this in the wrong way. Calcium is the body's most tightly regulated mineral. This is because the heart muscle is very, very sensitive to the amount of calcium that is in the bloodstream. So if the amount of calcium is too high or too low, it will have a major impact on how the heart muscle can do its job and beat. And we want that to be functioning properly, right? It's really important that our heart muscle does its job. So what the body does in order to keep that calcium level in a tightly regulated variable of number or range is that if there's too much calcium in the blood, it will deposit it into bones or into our teeth. And if there's not enough calcium in the blood and we're not getting enough through the diet, which I'm going to get to in a minute, it will start to rob calcium from the bones. And this is typically what is happening in osteoporosis, is there's not enough calcium circulating in the bloodstream and the body is not getting enough of it, either one, through the diet, or two, and more importantly, the body's not absorbing enough calcium from the digestive tract. And so what the body does is it says, well, I have to keep calcium at this particular level, so I'm going to steal some from the bones. So the number one most important thing that you can do to prevent osteoporosis is to keep your gut healthy. So we want to make sure that your digestive tract is actively able to absorb nutrients, particularly calcium, but nutrients of all kind as you get older. And you guys have heard me talk about this a lot. If you follow me or listen to my shows, keeping stress levels down is one of the most important things that we can do to ensure that our gut stays healthy. So in your 30s and your 40s, keeping a healthy absorption ability in the GI tract is one of the best things you can do as far as osteoporosis prevention. Then we can get into some other things. Obviously, keeping vitamin D levels are important because without enough vitamin D, we don't absorb calcium from the digestive tract. So getting your D levels checked regularly is the second thing that I would say. Make sure that your vitamin D levels are adequate. Adequate vitamin D levels are anywhere between 60 and 80. If they are below 60, you definitely need to be on a vitamin D supplement. You can also add a little bit of vitamin K in with your D. That can help with the absorption. And vitamin K is also really important for osteoporosis. Now, this comes up a lot as well. And some of the questions that I got were kind of focused on osteoporosis and dairy intake and whether or not dairy is good or bad. Here's what I'll say. Dairy is a source of calcium, but it is not the only source of calcium. You can get calcium in the diet from many, many other places. And one of the best places to get calcium in your diet is through dark leafy green vegetables. And the added benefit of getting calcium through those, things like kale or spinach or broccoli, anything that is green and is a vegetable, it's going to have calcium and it's also going to have vitamin K, which are really, really important. So if you do that and you take a vitamin D supplement and you keep your stress levels down and you keep your digestive functioning properly, that is the best thing that you can do prevention-wise in terms of osteoporosis. All right, question number two. How can I better control my metabolism? I tend to easily gain and lose 5 to 10 pounds over a couple of months. So this is a question that I get, or a common complaint that I see with patients, and I've seen this a lot in the past, you know, since the pandemic. People are, you know, in my office and they're really struggling with trying to lose 5 or 10 pounds. And this is what I hear a lot. People will sit down, they're like, I know I'm being vain. I know I'm not overweight, but I'm just really upset about this 5 to 10 pounds. And number one, I just want to say it is okay to be upset about 5 or 10 pounds. We have a weird, messed up diet culture and body image, but I think it's important to acknowledge that if you're feeling like your body doesn't feel like it should, that's okay. And you should be able to express that without someone saying, oh my gosh, you're fine, you're so thin. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that sometimes women almost don't feel safe saying, oh, I really feel like I should lose, even though you, so let's say that you're a woman and you weigh 150 pounds and normal for you is 140 pounds. And at 150 pounds, you're still healthy. You still pretty much fit in your clothes. You still look great, but you don't feel great. It's okay to be upset about that. I just want to put that out there. I also just want to say that, you know, that 10 pounds probably, you know, on that particular woman, if she's healthy, that 10 pounds probably is not detrimental to her weight. So it's not necessarily a medical issue, but it's okay to be feeling that way. So I just wanted to put that out there, that it's okay to be frustrated with your weight. But there's a fine line here, because we also don't want to be negatively talking about our bodies, right? So I think it's okay to be like, oh, my body doesn't quite feel like it normally does. It feels like I could maybe, you know, be a little bit thinner and I would feel better that way. But you also want to try to have some gratitude for your body. And I've been trying to have this, I'm going to get to the question about metabolism in a minute, but I think this is a really important thing to cover, because I'm having this conversation a lot in my one-to-one patient visits, that our bodies have carried us through some really heavy times in the past 20 months since March of 2020. And some of the way that our bodies have kind of adapted or adjusted to that is we've put on a little extra weight for some of us. Some of us may have lost some weight, but if you're one of those people where you're like, wow, since the pandemic, I've put on 5 to 10 pounds, what I would like to say to you is to, obviously we can address that and I'm going to talk about that, but the other piece is to have a little bit of gratitude for your body, because your body's done a really good job of supporting you in a physical way through a very emotionally stressful time. So again, there's a balance. We know we want you to be at the weight that you feel best at, but we also want to make sure that we're not having negative thoughts about our physical bodies, because that in and of itself can be the thing that keeps you from losing weight. So it's really important to just have that gratitude for your body. So now back to the question that I was originally asked, was how do I better control my metabolism? Well, number one, you want to make sure you keep blood sugar levels stable. So we don't want blood sugar highs, we don't want blood sugar dips. And in really stressful times, this can be a little bit tricky, because when the body's in fight flight, whether you've eaten or not, your blood sugar levels are going to go up. So one of the first things that happens is when cortisol floods the body and adrenaline floods the body, when you're in a stress state, the heart rate's going to go up, your blood pressure's going to go up, your pupils are going to dilate, all of the blood flow goes into the arms and legs. And our livers will break down something called glycogen, which is basically stored sugar that we always have on reserve in cases where we haven't eaten and we need to have blood sugar. So whether you've just eaten a big sugary meal or you've been fasting, if you go through a period of acute stress, your sugar is going to go up. If you go through a period of chronic stress, probably your sugars are going to stay elevated, which is not great. And prolonged elevated blood sugar, particularly in females above age 35, will tend to put us in a more insulin-resistant type state, which is kind of like a precursor to diabetes type of thing. And this is typically the biggest thing that I have seen in the past year and a half. I have a lot of women who are like, I haven't changed my diet, my exercise is the same. And they're not technically menopausal yet, but they're like, I've gained 10 pounds and their thyroid is more or less normal. That's a whole other thing. But So a lot of this comes to, we have to work on lowering stress levels throughout the day so that we can keep blood sugar down from that regard. And sometimes that may mean, and this you may have to kind of do an assessment on what your day-to-day schedule looks like, but if you're doing cardio like crazy and your stress levels are really high, sometimes the change that needs to happen is your exercise routine might need to be doing something that's not putting you in further stress mode. Or we need to be adding in some sort of calming, relaxing thing that will help bring blood sugar levels down. Because as I said, one of the best things you could do to control your metabolism is to keep blood sugar balanced. The other important thing that you want to do is if you're finding that you're struggling to lose weight or your weight is fluctuating, is make sure that you've had a full thyroid workup. And when I say full thyroid workup, if you guys have listened to other episodes, there's been plenty of episodes about thyroid stuff, but make sure you're getting not just your TSH. You want to make sure TSH is getting checked, free T3, free T4, reverse T3, T3 uptake, and your thyroid antibodies. You can have a very normal TSH and still have a slightly sluggish thyroid, which can be part of your metabolic issue. So that's kind of, I think that's going to be my answer to that, is making sure you keep your blood sugar balanced. And so, oh, the other thing I was going to mention is I've had a lot of people recently who've been doing intermittent fasting, but they're telling me that they're drinking coffee first thing in the morning. Now, there's a lot of conflicting stuff out there about fasting and dieting and all of this stuff, but if you are someone who has a high stress pace and you're doing intermittent fasting for the weight loss benefits, do not drink caffeine in the morning. Have coffee, but have decaf coffee, particularly if you are sensitive to caffeine. If you're sensitive to caffeine, that means if you can't drink coffee after 3 or 4 p.m. because it will keep you awake, that means your nervous system is very sensitive to caffeine, which means caffeine is putting your system into fight flight, which will mean that we're trying to do this fasting so that we can get balanced blood sugar levels a little bit better. But if you drink a cup of coffee at 6 a.m., you're essentially not fasting because your blood sugar levels are going to go up, but it's going to contribute to more blood sugar dysregulation. So if you're going to practice intermittent fasting, which can be a wonderful practice, do not put caffeine into the mix. I find people get much better results if they go caffeine free. Okay, next question. Sorry, I get a little long-winded with some of these questions. I have tried to meditate, but I can't quiet my brain and I just get frustrated. Do you have any suggestions? Oh yes, I do have some suggestions. So I struggled with this a lot when I was on my meditation journey. I was like, what the fuck? I'm in a curse because this can be really frustrating sometimes. Like, how in the world do you get your brain to quiet down? My brain, as you can tell, if you listen to my stuff, I like to talk. My brain goes way faster than the speed that I'm talking. And a lot of women are like that. Your brain is going a million miles a minute. We are thinking about 15 different things. What's going on right now? What happened yesterday? What's going on in the future? So trying to sit there and be like, let me quiet my mind, it's probably going to be near to impossible. So here is my meditation hack. When you go to sit down and when you're first approaching meditation, do not try to quiet your mind. Instead, try to focus your mind on something specific. And there's a lot of different techniques for meditation. Some people use breath work and they will focus on the breath. Some people will use a mantra and they will focus on the mantra. Those tools can be helpful. Here's what I find to be the most beneficial if you are really busy and you're new to meditation. Look at meditation as if you were looking at it to be like a visualization or a daydreaming practice. So schedule a 5 or 10 minutes and think about something that you like to daydream about. Maybe that is a vacation that you want to go on, or maybe it's you've got a goal to do XYZ. You can imagine yourself achieving that goal, or maybe it's a sexual fantasy and you can imagine yourself doing that. Actually, this is a good one to talk about because many of you know, if you've had a sexual fantasy, sometimes you will actually, even if it's not real, it's just in your brain, you will get a physiologic response from that sexual fantasy. Your brain doesn't actually know the difference between what it's thinking and what's actually happening. And we can use this to our advantage. So I will tell you how I meditate in the morning. I close my eyes, and I typically do this first thing in the morning when I'm still in bed. So I'm laying down to get my brain focused and to get myself into a calm state so my brain doesn't go crazy, is I imagine myself doing yoga. Particularly, I imagine myself doing 5 sun salutations, and I will walk myself through it, I'll feel it, and it just gets my brain, it's something that I can focus on, and I do this enough in real life, so it's easy for me to feel that. So if you're a yogi, you can use that. If you're not a yogi, imagining yourself exercise is a pretty easy thing to do if you are someone who exercises. Let's say that you love gardening. You could close your eyes and imagine yourself gardening. It doesn't really matter what it is, but you want to be able to close your eyes and really try to visualize and see yourself in that moment. If you're not a visual person, and I've had someone tell me this before, then go for something auditory. So listen to a music that you like. Meditation really is, we're trying to kind of back-end access that rest, digest, that parasympathetic nervous system. So if you can't seem to quiet your brain, and again, I still can't quiet my brain, so I just direct my brain. It's like a toddler. Sometimes a toddler, if they're upset about, you know, the blue cup versus the red cup, you don't try to argue with that. You just say, oh, hey, let's redirect you over here. And let's have you watch this TV show, or we're going to give you a muffin, or we're trying to redirect the brain so that it can stay focused on something else. And typically we're trying to focus it on something that's not our everyday to-do list that's stressing us out. So we want to focus it on something that's calming to the brain. So for instance, yoga is typically calming to me. So when I, in the morning, I do those sun salutations, just like if I were to go to a class, it calms me down. It gets me in the space. It just like sets things up and it sets my day straight. So I highly encourage, if you're struggling with meditation, to look at it from that perspective, to try to have it be a visualization or just a little bit of a refocusing of your thoughts. I hope that that's helpful. Next question was, I missed out on your yoga retreat. Will you do another one? Yes, I'm currently in the process of planning another retreat with Elizabeth Scott and another fabulous teacher, Sarah Cates. It is going to be in May. Look out for the announcement on that coming soon. It will be in Maryland. So if you're local, if you're not local, you can also come join us. And we found a really cool spot. So excited about that. Next question. My sisters and cousins would benefit from listening to you discuss stress and how to heal. Can I hire you for a speaking engagement? Oh, I've gotten this question a lot. Yes, I frequently do speaking engagements. So if you're interested in having me come to your workplace or do a Zoom presentation, I do the Ultimate Stress Reset workshop. And I've offered that to a lot of people in the workplace, to, you know, groups of people that want to get together that don't maybe not necessarily want to work one-on-one with a naturopathic doctor, but they want to get some of the knowledge. And sometimes the small intimate workshops are really, really nice because we can go off on tangents and talk about this or that. And if you're busy and, you know, you want to get a lot of information in a small snippet of time, that can be really helpful. If you're interested in doing that, you can go to my website, drerinkinney.com. There's a little thing you can click on that says you're interested in hiring me for a speaking engagement. I'm happy to do that. Next question. What are your must-have supplements, and is there a brand that you trust? So this is going to vary, but I would say that if you're just looking for, you know, basic maintenance, you want to make sure you're covering all your bases and keeping yourself healthy. Obviously, this is going to differ if we're working on something very, very specific health-wise. But if you are trying to make sure that you just have got, like I said, basics covered, vitamin D, definitely a must-have. A multivitamin, if you feel like your diet is lacking or you're not really that focused on lacking, a food-based multivitamin is a really great way to go. So if your diet's really good and you really focus hard on getting in enough fruits and veggies and you're getting adequate protein and you're eating organic and you're not eating pesticides, a multi is not necessarily an absolute must. But like I said, if your diet is not super great and you don't always buy organic and you maybe eat out a lot, I would recommend taking a food-based multivitamin. There are a lot of brands out there. And here's what I'll say about this, because this is a question I get a lot. What's your favorite brand of this? I mean, I, of course, have my favorite brands. I have a supplement line. If you want to check it out, it's called Optimal Harmony. I have a protein powder that doubles as a multivitamin. It's also great for blood sugar balance. It's called Perfect Protein. I drink it every morning for breakfast. It is amazing. There are so many supplements out there. What you want to look for when you're going to look in a supplement is, first and foremost, you want to look at the other ingredients, right? So before you even look at what's actually in the supplement, go to the other ingredient list and make sure that there's no dyes. If you see yellow dye or red dye or blue dye, you don't want it. If there's more than five other ingredients, you don't want to put that into your body, and you definitely don't want to spend money on it. And particularly for multivitamins, unless they are food-based, a multivitamin should be in a capsule. Actually, really any vitamins, herbs are slightly different, but any vitamin, like if it's magnesium or vitamin C, you don't want it in a tablet. The tablets tend to have a lot of extra fillers. There's a lot of extra things in those tablet forms because it's something that they have to bind it all together. So look for things that the only other ingredient is vegetable capsule and maybe a little bit of magnesium stearate. You really want to have the fewest number of other ingredients in there. So that's the number one important thing. And then actually go look at what's in the supplement. Make sure it's something that you're wanting to be taking. If we're looking at multivitamins, I'd say the most important things that I look at are the forms of the B vitamins, particularly B12 and B9, which is folate. You want folate or methylated folate. You do not want folic acid. Folic acid is the synthetic form of vitamin B9. It's really hard for the body to metabolize. It can be really detrimental to anyone if you've got MTHFR mutations. If you have any sort of methylation mutation, folic acid is going to cause a lot of issues. So definitely stay away from that. And that may be if you're taking a B complex. They sneak folic acid into a lot of places. So if you're having any sort of unexplained anxiety, depression, or if you've got a family history of cardiac disease, heart disease of any kind, really important to stay away from folic acid. So check the labels. If this is like your wake-up call, to go look at the labels of the supplements you're taking. Just because XYZ person on Instagram said this was the best, or you know, you got a newsletter, you still need to read the labels. You know, like it's really important to read labels of what you're putting into your body. So back to must-have. So I said vitamin D, a multi if your diet's not that great. And again, with multis, you want to look at B12, folate. For the B12 form, you really want methylcobalamin. Yeah, you don't want cyanocobalamin. So methylcobalamin or S-adenylcobalamin. Cyanocobalamin is not really easily absorbed, so not a great one. Yeah, I mean, I would say those two are really important. You know, if you're looking for immune support, this is a really general question in today's times. Most of us, I get a lot of this question a lot, is like, what kind of immune support should I be on? Vitamin C is probably something that most people should be taking at this point. We're headed into the winter. It's an antioxidant. It's beneficial for all kinds of things. Typically, I recommend people take between 2 and 5,000 milligrams daily of vitamin C, depending on what your digestive tolerance is to it. And the other thing that I would say that can be really helpful in today's time is a magnesium supplement. Magnesium gets depleted by almost everything. Alcohol depletes it, stress depletes it. It's the number one most used mineral as a cofactor in the body. So, and it gets depleted all the time just because if we're actively doing a lot of processes in the body, we're not going to have enough of it. So a magnesium supplement can be really helpful. Magnesium forms, we want to be particular about the forms. Magnesium citrate, magnesium glycinate, and magnesium taurate are typically the three that I will recommend. There's a lot of other forms. Citrate is going to give you, if you take higher doses of it, you may have looser bowels, which if you're constipated, we can kind of use that as a helpful thing to keep bowels moving. If your bowels are sensitive to magnesium, magnesium taurate or magnesium glycinate are going to be a little bit better. If you're prone to heart palpitations or you have a lot of anxiety, magnesium taurate is probably the best form for you. It's really nice. So yeah, so those, I say vitamin D, a multi, magnesium and vitamin C are probably currently the go-to things that I would say if you're kind of like must-have things that you should be taking every day. Okay, next question. What is something you wish you knew in your 20s? And that is a great question. I wish I knew in my 20s how important rest was and not to burn myself out. I did a lot of burning myself out in my 20s. I still do a lot of fair amount of burning myself out, but I was a big runner in my 20s and I ran a lot. I ran marathons, I ran half marathons, and I think I pushed my physical body probably a little harder than I should have. I also wish that I had more confidence in my body in my 20s. I did not love my body. I struggled with body issues. And you know, if you're female and you're listening to this, most females have been there. We worry so much about how our physical body looks and oh my gosh. And I look back at pictures of myself and I'm like, oh my God, I was gorgeous. Why did I not go out that night because I felt fat or not go out that night because, so I really wish that I had known to have more confidence in how, one, how my body looked and two, how hard my body was working for me. And again, I touched on this earlier when we talked about the weight stuff and the metabolism. It's really important to have gratitude for your body. And not just about how it looks, but how it's functioning for you, right? Like, you know, our bodies do so many things for us and they support us in so many different ways. And the human body is amazing. And I don't think I really knew it. I mean, I learned it when I was in naturopathic school and I remember every day being just astounded at all the different metabolic processes that are happening constantly. But having a baby and going through pregnancy really changed how I saw my body. And I kind of wish I could have, like, imprinted that knowledge on my 20-year-old self to been like, look at what your body is capable of. Just the entire process from, you know, carrying a pregnancy, carrying a baby, and then delivering a baby. It's just pretty amazing what our human bodies can do. And then I will say, just in the past 2 years, at what our bodies can withstand mentally, emotionally, you know, with the stress that we've been under, our bodies are amazing. So I think that's something that I wish I could have imparted on my 20-year-old self, was just the sense of awe and gratitude and wonder about the body that I was living in. And then last question is, I've seen that childhood trauma can lead to autoimmune disease. Oh, this could be a fool. I should have started with this one. Is this true? So childhood trauma is going to set your system up for being kind of in a PTSD state. And not that it's always going to lead to autoimmune disorders, but there are pretty heavy correlations between severe, like big T trauma, and autoimmune diseases later in life. And it's just because of what I talk about all the time. If your body gets stuck in chronic fight flight, your nervous system is going to be constantly overstimulated. And when the nervous system is overstimulated, it's more likely to react to, you know, the human body is more likely to react to itself if there's overstimulation of the nervous system. The other thing that can happen in any sort of trauma, whether it's childhood trauma or trauma in adult or in your teens or in your 20s, is trauma will lower the levels of your cytokine, so a certain part of your immune system. So it tends to make you more susceptible to certain viral infections or Lyme disease or kind of the stealth pathogens. And those guys oftentimes are the things that trigger the immune system to go a little haywire. So trauma can kind of set you up for an autoimmune state in kind of two ways, and oftentimes they can go together. One, in that your stress levels are really high, which is going to upregulate immune function. And when immune function is chronically upregulated, again, we're more likely to react to ourselves or to overreact, essentially, and to think that ourself is bad. And second, if we've been through trauma, we're in kind of that chronic fight-flight state, and our immune system has been weakened on the one hand, it can leave us more susceptible to these stealth pathogens. And when those are there, our body's trying to kill those, but sometimes it mistakenly ends up attacking itself. And again, often those things go hand in hand. So if you're someone who's struggling with an autoimmune issue, and we've touched on this in many of the episodes, you know, it's really important to make sure that you're getting tested to see if you do have any stealth things, or the episode with Dr. Jamin Moore, where we talked about parasites and Lyme and mold. You need to make sure that those things are addressed, as well as calming down the nervous system, because all of those pieces are really important for reducing autoimmunity or protecting your body from developing an autoimmune. So I don't know the person that asked this question, if they were kind of looking at it from they themselves had experienced a childhood trauma, or if you have a child and they've experienced a trauma, I would say that the most important thing you can do is to start working on calming the nervous system. So this can be things like a breathwork practice, or starting that meditation practice, or doing something that you or whoever we're talking about loves. Anything that brings joy is going to calm the nervous system down. And when we calm the nervous system down, we are going to calm the immune system down. So I'm going to jump off because I've got to get on to my next recording. But thank you guys so much for listening. And like I said, if you have other questions, or if anything about this episode sparked a question, please send them in via email. I'd love to do another episode like this where we just answer questions. And if you have other questions about my supplement line, you can go to my website, draerinkinney.com. The supplement line is called Optimal Harmony. I've got a protein powder. I actually have a really great vitamin D that it's awesome. One drop has 1,000 I use. It does not have K2 in it, so I usually give it to my patients that are eating a good dose of vitamin K in their diet. But it works really, really well, and you can easily adjust the dose. It's great for the whole family. Those are the two most common ones that I kind of recommend across the boards. I have some others, specific ones for adrenals and thyroid and hormones. But so if you have questions about that, you can contact us. And again, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Dr. Kinney Show. Be sure to follow the show and leave a rating and a review. It supports me so much. Plus, I always love hearing from you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you next week.